Welcome to another episode of Capital Connection. As always, I'm your host, Matt Calder, and we are glad to have you here on the show today. On today's show, we are going to be talking with Brian Balfour, of course, the Executive Vice President of the Civitas Institute. We will be talking with him about all the different pork in the budget, really kind of where this extra, you know, earmarks, this pork, as they call it, extra spending that maybe shouldn't be there or shouldn't be done the way it's been done, where all this is in the budget coming from, and we'll be digging down to that. But before we get to that, while we're talking about Brian, I want to talk about the fact that this show is supported by the Civitas Institute, this show, and also nccapitalconnection.com, which is tangentially related to the show. You know, we have Capital Connection, the radio show, which is a lot more commentary on what's going on in the state government. And then we've got nccapitalconnection.com, which is the journalistic, more news side of what's going on in the state legislature and other portions of state government. And both of those are products of the Civitas Institute. We're sponsored by the Civitas Institute. And I also want to go ahead and make a mention of our social media for the show. And you can follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, all at Capital Connection or NCCapCon, NCCAPCONN, or just search Capital Connection or NC Capital Connection, and that will all show up for you there. You can like our Facebook page, you can follow us on Twitter, follow us on Instagram, and keep up with what's going on in the show and catch things that are going on in between the shows. And see things that are going on at nccapitalconnection.com and really get a good feel for everything that's going on in the Capital Connection space. But first, I want to talk about subscribing to the show. If you're not already subscribed to the show, you're missing out on the easiest way to get the show to your device. You can just go into one of the apps. If you're an Android user, you have to go out and search in the App Store and get one like Podcast Addict or one of the many other free Android apps for podcasting. Or if you're an Apple user, you just use Apple Podcasts and you just go in and search for the show. Just search Capital Connection, it'll show up. You subscribe, you get the show to your device automatically. You don't have to worry about going and hunting down the show every week. And it really just makes your life a little bit simpler there. So without any further ado, we are going to talk with Brian Balfour about the pork in the budget. All right, Brian, thanks for joining us back on the show.
Thanks for having me, Matt.
So, of course, since we've got you on, you know, people know economics talk is coming. There's some sort of government money talk coming. And today, of course, it's going to be on the budget. That's the big deal right now, the reason we're in a short session, you know, ostensibly like the number one reason is to make these adjustments to the budget and get us through another year to the long session when the next full budget for the next biennium will be put together. There will be some other things that happen during this short session, but the overarching reason to be here is to get budget adjustments passed before the end of the fiscal year, June 30th. Of course, the House and Senate passed their conference report budget, sent it on to the Governor Cooper. Governor Roy Cooper then vetoed it, surprising absolutely nobody. And he, of course, said, you know, we're gonna be looking over this budget over the next few days and take a look at it. But I've already said these really negative things about it, and no one's gonna be, you know, everyone will be surprised when I vetoed, of course. So he vetoed it. The Senate that same week went ahead and passed their override vote. And then the House is set to pass it tomorrow as of the day we're recording this, early in this week. Of course, this show will go live over the weekend and go up online early next week. But as of now, the House has not taken the override vote, but does have the vote with just Republicans, does still have that supermajority. As long as they're voting as a block, the Republicans can overcome the Democratic Governor Roy Cooper's veto, and the budget will go into effect, or budget adjustments will go into effect. So that's kind of where we are now. But before we jump into sort of the nitty-gritty of the budget, I was hoping you would give us, or we could talk about some of the highlights of the difference between the plan that Governor Cooper put up, that he was holding up as his shining example, and the House and Senate conference report plan that was ultimately passed.
Yeah, that's a great point. You know, with Cooper vetoing the budget that he was presented by the General Assembly, it certainly, you know, raises the questions, okay, well, what would he have preferred? And of course, we have a document that shows us what he would have preferred is his budget proposal that was released, put out there a couple of months ago. And some, you know, just kind of looking at some of the top line numbers and some of the most significant differences between the two, you know, for starters, of course, is just the full price tag of the budget, so to speak. So the General Assembly's plan would have spent about $500 million less than Governor Cooper's plan, Cooper's proposal. And And there's a pretty, obviously that equates to a significant difference in terms of the year over year spending increase. For more specifically, the General Assembly's budget would increase the budget less than 4% over the current year versus Cooper's plan, his larger spending proposal, would have increased the budget 6.6% over the current year budget proposal. That is a pretty aggressive year over year spending increase. And in fact, I looked back at recent history, that would have signified the largest year-over-year budget increase in North Carolina in the last 10 years. So, you know, when Cooper's vetoing this budget, it's really out of his desire to want to spend a lot more of our money and also to raise our taxes. Of course, Cooper's plan would have negated, if you will, canceled the scheduled tax cuts that are set to take place at effective in 2019, specifically the personal income tax rate going to fall from 5.499% to 5.25%. Corporate income tax rate is now scheduled to drop from 3% to 2.5%. And that would equate to certainly the personal income tax cut alone is going to provide about $100 to $110 million in tax relief for the first half of 2019 calendar year alone. So this is kind of what we have to contrast, you know, between Cooper's vision and the General Assembly's vision for their budget. Cooper wanted a significantly higher rate of spending and also wanted to impose tax hikes on people of North Carolina.
Right. And so, of course, as you said, that the Governor Cooper did release his budget plan, and you can very easily, you know, compare and contrast the differences between the two. But what I found so interesting last week that came out was, you know, having this plan out there for the public to see, Fiscal Research Division, the state legislature, was able to sit there and crunch the numbers on, you know, what would Governor Cooper's budget proposal really come out as on the other end versus the legislature's proposal. And actually, the Fiscal Research Division found that his budget was you know, almost $470 million in the red, running a deficit, that there was going to be, it was not a balanced budget, as Governor Cooper said. It was not going to come out and be a sustainable budget by any means. I mean, it's almost $500 million really in the hole from this increased spending in these other places. And you know, of course, the Governor Cooper's Office of State Budget Management, you know, that's in his administration, that's his people, crunched the numbers a little differently and came up with something that came out in the black. But ultimately, you know, the nonpartisan Fiscal Research Division came out and said, you know, that's not what we find. And actually, if you take what the legislature used for their growth projections of 4%, Fiscal Research Division uses 4.5%. So they were crunching Governor Cooper's numbers at 4.5% growth rate, whereas when the legislature did their budget proposal, they crunched it at that 4%. So they had even less of a surplus at the end than Fiscal Research Division gave them when looking at the legislature's budgets. But I'd like to see the legislature's model applied to Governor Cooper's budget, because if invariably with 0.5% less growth, you would have to assume that $469 million and change would be a higher number, an even higher gap than what came out from Fiscal Research Division.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely right. So, I mean, the Fiscal Research Division was being generous, if you will, when applying the models and the numbers and projections to Governor Cooper's budget. And so let's discuss what that means here real quickly. What that analysis was doing was taking, if Governor Cooper's budget was passed this year, what the state would be facing next year come 2019, the summer of 2019, as they go to try to, pass a budget for fiscal year 2019-20. And as you mentioned, there would be this structural deficit involved in there of about $469 million. This is just based on their estimates and projections. And what that means then is that come this time next summer, that budget writers would have to try to plug that gap and there's two ways they can do that. Obviously, they can try to find more revenue, which means tax increases on people to the tune of almost $500 million, or they need to find find spending to cut. And you know, I think some of the legislative offices did some numbers there and said that would equate to you know, trying to find $469 million in savings would equate to, I think, laying off somewhere in the neighborhood of 7,000 teachers. You know, so I thought that was kind of an interesting kind of tidbit to raise and put up in, you know, and try to force Cooper to respond to that. You know, hey, if you had your way with your budget, what are you going to do? Are you going to slap a $500 million tax on North Carolinians, or are you going to cut back thousands of teachers, you know, to try to make your unsustainable structural budget deficit try to balance?
I mean, and looking at his budget, you can look at the things he wants to have more funding for and really see where the priorities are there. And I mean, this looks like political pandering. You know, yeah, we're going to give teachers a huge raise. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. Yeah, we're going to do all that. And it's like, you know what? Let's say I get, you know, I get paid this Friday. I can have a really big weekend. You know, I'll have fresh money in the bank. I can go out and I can have a really nice big weekend, take my buddies out, buying drinks. But you know what? I got car payments coming up. I've got bills coming up. I got, you know, insurance and that sort of stuff coming up. And that's going to be a problem when you say I have this big, you know, real, you know, Mr. Popular weekend and everyone seems to be liking me, but I'm overextending myself, overspending. I'm going to run into a problem. And that's what it looks like here. There's all these, you know, yeah, we're going to do this, we're going to give you that, we're going to give you that, sure. And then you come up $500 million in the hole, and is it coming out of the rainy day fund? What about we're coming into hurricane season? I mean, that butts up, you know, we're going to run into a major problem.
Yeah, right, and it's really easy for Cooper to make all those promises knowing that, you know, his budget proposal was going to go nowhere, you know, given the makeup of the General Assembly. But I think this fiscal research document really kind of called him out on that. It's like, oh, you know, Mr. Generous, you know, Governor Cooper wanting to promise all these goodies and everything to all these folks across the state. Well, guess what? That comes with a price tag. That comes with a heavy price tag. And most of what Cooper was promising would have been recurring spending obligations, which, you know, again, would have translated into that structural deficit. I mean, these were things that you know, these are not one-time kind of, you know, feel-good expenditures, and they go away the following year. These get rolled into the structural budget. And one thing, too, it's even worse because one thing Cooper wanted to do was expand Medicaid. And Medicaid expansion would have been to the way they wanted it done, would have expanded Medicaid to somewhere to the tune of 500,000 to 600,000 people. Imagine what cost that is going to have coming down the line in future years. So that $469 million structural budget deficit for next year, that's just the icing on the cake. You know, what's really baked in the cake of massive deficits in the future that Cooper wanted would be found in that Medicaid expansion.
Right. I mean, that's just a whole other can of worms to get into, is this recurring issues that would come through, not just these one-time salary increases and that sort of thing, these headline promises. And but we kind of need to move on now to our next, you know, sort of part two topic, or really delving down into the budget a little more. And you know, looking at some of the different just pork in the budget, or things that really ought not be in a budget. And I've got your article here that was put up, and what is it says, you know, identifying 166 local inappropriate earmarks or pork in the budget that totaling up to $30 million. And these are things that are just from this adjustment. This is not this is not the entire biennium budget. This is just things they're tweaking in this portion. This is just changes they're making now. Am I right?
Right, you're absolutely right. I found 166 items, and you know, this is just the changes they added during this adjustment process to the second year of the budget. So they're very well can be many more of these type of items, these kind of local earmark projects wrapped up into the budget already. But I wanted to underscore and call attention to these 166 new items because I know the legislature has been roundly criticized and by Civitas as well for kind of the lack of transparency during this budget creation process. It was crafted behind closed doors. House and Senate got together and just came up with one budget, didn't allow amendments to it, which really kind of short-circuited the typical process. And now we kind of find out what they were doing behind those closed doors. There was a lot of horse trading going on, a lot of adding line items to politicians, you know, bringing money home to their district for very localized projects and, you know, picking out some of their favorite local nonprofit charities to direct money to in the budget. And, you know, we can certainly get into some of the specific examples here momentarily if you'd like. But I think it's just really important to note that, you know, this lack of transparency could be a part of, you know, the cause, the reasoning behind so many of these localized earmark projects. You know, as I mentioned, 166 of these items, you know, that really gives us a glimpse into what was taking place behind closed doors during this process.
Right. And sort of for me, the takeaway is not, and I do want to go over some of these projects, but the takeaway for me really is not that these are inherently bad things. Pork and, you know, earmarks doesn't necessarily mean that what is being paid for is bad or inappropriate for government to do, at some levels of government, but that it's not something that needs to come out of all taxpayers' pockets, because it only is a very localized project, or, you know, it's something that benefits a very, you know, people in one county or one municipality that everyone in the state's paying a portion of, and that's not appropriate. But also, it's these, you know, it's a political point. It's, you know, so-and-so from Johnston County gets to go back and say, hey, you see this new walking trail? I got that for you. I went up to Raleigh, and I got that for you, so you should keep me in office. It is spending every taxpayer's money for something for a small localized portion of people that just happen to be the ones who are responsible for keeping you in office and you in power. And that fundamentally is not right. Not looking at what the project is for or whether it's in something that is positive for, you know, so-and-so county or so-and-so municipality or town. Above and beyond that, it's the entire process of where the money's coming from versus who it benefits versus which politician it benefits to do it. It's really my takeaway from this.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and let's just get into a few of these examples real quick. I mean, there's plenty to choose from, certainly, but for example, $200,000 to the city of Burlington for a pool renovation. Okay, keep in mind, this is statewide taxpayer dollars going in to fund this very localized project. $500,000 to the city of Dunn for just a recreational park. Another $500,000 to the city of Eden for their Parks and Recreation Department. You know, again, this is statewide tax dollars funding these very localized projects. And, you know, getting back to your comment previously, I mean, if government is to fund these kind of projects at all, certainly it should be the local governments, you know, the city of Dunn, the city of Eden, you know, their local governments paying for those projects rather than in having this come out of state taxpayer dollars. I mean, people all across the state are being forced and compelled to pay for these, you know, very localized projects that they were obviously never even see, let alone set foot on.
Right. I mean, I'm looking over the list and I'm going and I'm seeing things again that are just, you know, a guardrail for a certain school in a certain, you know, a certain county, which is a county school system. And it's like, well, this school needs a guardrail. And I go, okay, that school might need a guardrail, or it might need to really be a really good project. Or like you said, the city of Burlington, is, you know, this pool renovation or this park in Dunn. I mean, these are not bad projects, but I, as a taxpayer, am not going to benefit from this park in the city of Dunn. I'm just not. It's not something I should be paying for. I know this kind of conversation is so easy to get caught up in saying, okay, there in the town of Huntersville, there's a Veterans Park project that's getting $50,000 in the budget. It's so easy for someone to take me saying that's not an appropriate project for a statewide tax tax outlay, or, you know, spending of statewide tax dollars. That's not an appropriate project. And someone can go, Matt Calder hates veterans. He doesn't support this project. I go, well, it's just not my project. It's not. I'm not going to go and pay my neighbor's light bill. It's not my power bill. Or not going to pay the light bill of someone in, you know, the over in Huntersville. It's just not my responsibility. If the people of Huntersville want to have this park, or they want to do it in partnership with the county and a private business, these public-private partnerships they're pushing, and they want to use their tax dollars to do it, great, go for it. It's just not something the state needs to be paying for with statewide tax dollars.
Yeah, absolutely right. And I mean, that's why I itemize them, so people can have a look at just how localized these projects are that their state taxpayer dollars are going to. And also, I do want to note, if folks do look at the article and look at the spreadsheet, they'll notice several line items going to nonprofits and charities. And again, the point is not to disparage the work that these nonprofits are doing. They're all doing very admirable work. The issue is, however, that it's inappropriate for the state budget to have line items and legislators specifically calling out state tax dollars directed to their personal favorite charities, typically localized charities in their backyard. And also there's normally a grant process. If nonprofits are to get money from the state, typically, you know, it's not directed by a line item in the budget, but rather there is a grant process in the various agencies and departments in state government where they can apply to try to get state funding. So, you know, what we're really calling out is just circumventing the normal grant competition process for nonprofits to get money. And, you know, just because one charity or nonprofit gets money and they may do laudable work, well, guess what? There's thousands of very laudable charities across the state. You know, why are these individual ones getting picked out for this kind of favorable treatment to get state taxpayer dollars? And that's really why we're shedding light on this database, the spreadsheet of earmarks in the budget.
Right, and that's another good point, that this is supposed to be a competitive process if there is going to be money going to these granting projects for different nonprofits, if that money is going to be available, which we can have a whole other conversation about what is the appropriate role of government spending in the first place. But if you are going to go down that road where government is going to be giving money to nonprofits, it needs to be a competitive process where you're not just handing somebody that money with process to go through and make sure they still need to be getting it, they're the most deserving group to get it. It's just not the way things are done, especially, you know, in the private sector where there's, you know, private charities and giving, then there are grant making processes. Civitas is constantly going through granting processes to get grants and having to prove that you're worthy of these grants in a lot of ways and how you'll use them. And for that process to not exist and for someone to just kick the grant out to so-and-so group is just another, you know, it's an inappropriate way of handing out taxpayer money. And yeah, that's not even getting into the question of whether you should have that going on.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you can look at some of the list of their, you know, for example, there's a nonprofit in Gaston County that works with people with disabilities. They're getting $500,000 in the budget. I mean, that's fantastic for that group, but there's lots of groups across the state that work with people with disabilities. You know, why are whatever politician that inserted that line item into the budget, you know, why are they getting selected for this specialized treatment, and all the other groups working with people with disabilities, why are they excluded from that? It really just calls out, you know, the kind of favoritism, kind of the bringing home the bacon, that politicians have been engaging in, certainly for generations, that people are really, quite frankly, fed up with. And again, making matters worse, I'll go back to it again, this was done behind closed doors, a real lack of transparency during the process. So, you know, I think, you know, there's certainly some good things. We talked at the outset of this segment about how this budget spends half a billion dollars less than Cooper's plan and so forth. But certainly want to call people's attention to the downside. This $30 million of all these local pet projects being inserted, that certainly raises a red flag of, well, okay, are we falling back into some of the bad habits that the previous, you know, leadership, we criticize them for? You know, we're certainly going to be consistent and continue to call them out as the new leadership kind of picks up some of these old bad habits.
Right, and it's hard. I mean, I understand for them it's hard to not fall into that trap, but they need to stay away from that kind of political gamesmanship. I mean, it really comes off as that, as, you know, and you know, hey, yeah, I'll give you $50,000 for this. Yeah, sure. You get your vote on this, I can give you $70,000. It kind of makes you think about when my wife goes to the gas station, getting gas in her car, and she walks in the gas station, she gets chocolate milk, she gets a thing of candy. And you go, you know, it was $4, $5, maybe, depends on what she's getting. But if you do it every time you fill your car up, it adds up and adds up and adds up. So it becomes, you know, $30 million on a budget, and we're talking about, like, well, we want to, we want to give teachers more of a raise, or we want to do more of this, we'd like to do more of this. Start cutting the things that don't need to be there. What's more important for statewide tax dollars, paying state teachers, you know, which are state employees, giving raises to other state employees, or is it installing lights at a park entrance in Yancey County for $300,000?
Yeah, it really calls into question, you know, priorities. There's also, you know, the state is facing somewhere in the neighborhood of $35 billion in unfunded liabilities for state retirees for their health, you know, their health benefits. What about socking away $30 million into a fund to start to, you know, start drilling down that that obligation? So again, just kind of the dark underbelly, if you will, of the state budget process being exposed here. And I think this just kind of represents the type of process that people are fed up with, that represents kind of the worst in political horse trading. And you know, I think you know, hopefully people will have a look at this and really start questioning their legislators of you know, are they more interested with bringing home the bacon to their district or being responsible stewards of taxpayer dollars?
Right, and I think that, I mean, I would rather see legislators winning their seats and keeping their seats on the merits of, you know, reduce spending, actually shrinking the budget as opposed to controlling the growth of the budget, actually get rid of some of this pork, or a lot of this pork, and shrink the budget. I'd rather see a legislator come back and go, we're spending less of your money. We are spending less of your money. We are lowering your taxes because we don't need it. Keep more of this money, because that's the guy I'm going to keep in office. I'm not gonna take the legislator who shows up in Clayton, North Carolina, and says we are extending this greenway into downtown. You know, do I think that's a good thing to do? I think it's probably a good thing to do, but the way you do it matters. And I'd rather have the legislator coming in and going, we're spending less money. Your taxes are lower. You're keeping more of your own money. There you go. If you like what you see, keep putting me in office. If you don't, send me home.
Yeah, absolutely, and not to mention the potential for corruption that this kind of process invites. You know, you've got local all these local projects. Well, there's money going to the local contractors, right? That are going to have to, you know, build these, renovate these parks and build the pools and so forth. And you know what's happening maybe behind closed doors with kind of a quid pro quo. It really starts raising those questions. And it invites that kind of corruption. It's like, oh, hey, we're a local contractor. We can get $500,000. Sure, we'll donate to your campaign. You know, that really just brings out the shady sides of politics.
Well, that's why I always think it's funny. There's always going to be at least one guy in construction on any town council, or one guy in property management on any town council. Well, that is a whole other can of worms we don't need to get into, right, and we don't have the time to get into, unfortunately. But thanks for coming on the show and really digging down to this budget and kind of bringing out the bacon with us.
All right. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you, listeners, for coming on the show and coming here each week and listening to what we're putting out and being engaged in your state government. And hopefully you do feel more connected to your capital. Again, this is Capital Connection. So everything we do here is meant to really just draw you to what's going on in your capital. And again, one more time, thank you for listening, and we'll catch you next time.